Comics in Motion is proud to be sponsored by Renovations Press, home of the world-renowned Tracksuit Man, the story about traveling to which we can all relate, and something we've all missed this last year. Renovations Press continues to make the decades-long quest to bring quality independent comics to the masses, with three comics each year featuring the supergroup slash government experiment gone wrong, Section 12. Click the link in the show notes for more information about how you can buy some high-quality independent comics. And stay tuned, because each time a new issue comes out in 2021, Comics in Motion listeners will be eligible to win free copies of Section 12. Click that link, check out Renovations Press, support them on Patreon. You'll be happy you did. What started as just an appearance on Indie Comics Spotlight has turned into an excellent partnership between Comics in Motion and Renovations Press. We look forward to bringing you some amazing content.
Welcome to Comics in Motion WandaVision Special. I'm one of your hosts, Dave Horrocks, and I'm joined by two fabulous co-host guests. First of all, Scott Weatherly from the 20th Century Geek. Welcome to the show.
Ah, you're right. Yeah, looking forward to talking about this. I was going to say superhero show, but let's discuss it. It's a 60s sitcom to begin with.
Awesome. Our other guest is Matt from Jasper Reviews, and also What's the Topic? Welcome to the show, Matt.
Lovely, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to trying to work out what actually happened in these two episodes.
Well, I think one of the things I think we'll be talking about is how much of a comic nerd do you have to be to actually get enjoyment out of this?
Yeah.
Now,
well, I'd argue that, because I think comic nerd is one thing. I'd say how much of a pop culture nerd do you have to be to enjoy this?
I think so. I've no idea how long this is going to be. We're going to be covering episodes 1 and 2. And then from this, they're going to be weekly episodes, and we'll just cover those. So we're aiming to release these every Sunday. And yeah, we'll have a few different guests. And we'll take it from there. So I guess, Scott, let's come back to that first question then. How much of a pop culture nerd do you have to be to enjoy this one?
Well, I'm going to say, this is the thing about this, because they've kept a lot of this quiet in the sense of, like, you know, what is it that this show is going to be? What was it supposed to be? And, you know, there's been the trailers have sort of shown bits and pieces, but these first two episodes are fundamentally episodes of a sitcom, and the first one in particular, like, doesn't really give a great deal away. Like, you could be watching an episode of I Love Lucy, or The Honeymooners, or something else from that period, and it's got some great Easter eggs. But like, if you've just come off Avengers Endgame and you're like, oh yes, I'm ready to see what's going on here, and you sat down to this 20 minute episode, I think you'd be sort of going, I have no idea what this is. If, however, you know that history of Lucille Ball and, you know, those sort of the typical American sitcoms, there's a lot here to be going like, well, fair play for like this bold storytelling. And it adds a layer. So I actually really enjoyed it, but like, I was getting so much from the little nods and pokes that it was making it, like, you know, not just the superhero stuff, but like everything else that sort of has come before it.
Absolutely. And I do think it is bold. And I think, Scott, you and I are probably in that generation where we got lots of these reruns. So I think, as well as I Love Lucy, you know, you've got quite a bit of the Dick Van Dyke Show in there, quite a lot of Bewitched, particularly with the
season
sound effects.
Two. Yeah, episode 2 is very Bewitched. Yeah.
Yeah. But Matt, I think you're a bit younger than us, aren't you? And I don't know if you'll have actually seen any of these original shows. So what did you make of that? Basically, the overall tone of, well, pretty much 1 and 2 together.
I mean, I loved it. I loved that, like, the homage it was to these shows of, you know, yesteryear. And I thought they nailed that tone perfectly in that, you know, that aesthetic of these shows. And I found that highly enjoyable. I felt with how they're telling this story that obviously you don't really know what's going on. That's very much Marvel saying, essentially, you're either with us or you're not by this point. Or, you know, in the, you know, these stories have been going, what, 12, 13 years now. Mm. So now it's it's time, you're either with us or you're not, because we're not holding your hand through these stories anymore. But you know, I, as for someone who's a fan, I'm like, yeah, I'll stick with this. But also, if you weren't a fan, didn't really know much about it, you'd be going, what is this, what the hell is this? So I mean, I loved it, but that could be the big Marvel fan in me speaking, who's saying, yeah, let's see where this goes. But I'm willing to see.
I've got to say, though, there's probably some poor sap who's sort of like trawling through, you know, Disney Plus, and is like, who's watched, like, you know, Avengers and probably Doctor Strange and others. Oh, I like Scarlet Witch. Look at this. And I like, you know, old Paul Bettany. Yeah, I'm going to try this out. Not a clue. Wouldn't have a clue what was going on.
There's something wrong with my Disney Plus here. I keep getting old reruns of I Love Lucy. You use the word bold there, Scott, and I think that is a brilliant word, because I think there will be a lot of people in that camp where they're like, I don't get this. I don't like it.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, the fact that they've dropped the two episodes, and I'm wondering to myself, for those type of people, the ones who aren't the super fans, the more casual kind of MCU fans, I think maybe a few of those would be lost, and maybe people like that might get more enjoyment out of it if they could actually binge it and find out what the hell's going on.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a couple of things. Well, there's a couple of things from this, really. I think the first thing is, as you say, I think you're going to see a spike in watching of this after all episodes are out, because you're going to get people that have watched these first two episodes. And there's a couple of things in the first two episodes to try and keep you entertained or keep you enticed. Like, you know, that the end of episode one, the credits are back to this sort of, you know, you see S.W.O.R.D. and you get the sort of back to, you know, there's clearly a presence outside. And there's more of that in episode two, just a little bit more, like not much, but, you know, a smidge more. So if you're in the know, you go, oh, that's clearly an outside influence. But there's going to be people dropping off going like, nope. And then, but then later on, when it's all out, people coming back and going, no, look, stick with it. Get through that. It's ace. You know, by episode four, you'll be really into it. And I reckon you're going to see a spike of people going back and binging all this in one go. The other thing, though, is this is, I think this is a statement of intent from Kevin Feige for the next phase. It's a bit like, look, we've done our sort of relatively straightforward superhero stories, you know. Now we're going to try something weird. And we're going to give you the weirdest one possible. So to really dunk you in it. So when you get Loki and the fact that, you know, the character that's been dead four times is now going to be hopping through time. And we're going to have all these super soldier things. And then you've got Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. And they're going to have the multiverse in Spider-Man. Like, yeah, this is our sort of sheep dip into the Marvel weird, I think.
Yeah, and I think I agree. I think a few people get turned off and then might come back to it later. But I have to keep reminding myself that, well, this wasn't supposed to be basically the first thing after Endgame. Because we've gone all this time. And like you say, if people have been blown away by Endgame, then they come to this, they're like, this is not what I was expected. It was supposed to be Black Widow and Falcon and Winter Soldier, wasn't it? And then they've reshuffled things. So I do think this one will align more with Spider-Man and also Doctor Strange. So, I you know, incorporating that weirder, wackier kind of magic space. So I think, like I say, that's not a criticism of it. It's just it was not the original order that they were going to release things.
No, but it shows a real confidence in what they've got, doesn't it?
I think it's the perfect one to be released. Because Black Widow and Falcon Winter Soldier, they're very similar characters, aren't they? They're going to be very similar stories, you know, that kind of spy espionage type of story. So why not try do something a bit more wackier, a bit more crazier, that's, you know, interpreted more comic booky kind of storylines and tropes to bring everyone back into Marvel and go, oh yeah, I remember what Marvel was like. It's been, you know, whatever, a year and a half since we had a story. So let's just go full on for it, get people brought back into it, compared to, say, something like Black Widow and Falcon Winter Soldier, which are a bit more generic in kind of the stories they tell.
Yeah, and I wonder as well, because I've heard it said that, you know, the MCU movies, they're all just a bit the same. I don't subscribe to that myself, but I have heard that said. And, you know, they don't take any chances. Well, this is almost like a big F you to yeah. all those critics. You know, this is no one's ever done anything like this that I can think where not only is it like a little nod, we knew from the trailers it was going to be a little bit wacky, it was going to be a bit sitcom, but not as much as it was for these first two episodes.
Definitely. Well, I mean, it works now in that they've established a successful franchise. People are on board. And now I think, you know, they've been doing stories like Guardians and obviously Infinity War Endgame, kind of just throwing it out there that, you know, things are going to get a bit more confusing, a bit more sort of wackier. And they're testing those waters and seeing, yeah, everyone understands this. So let's just go for it now. Because obviously I think this story, if it's told right at the start of the MCU, doesn't work because people just won't buy into it. But by this point, you know, Marvel's kind of that seal of, you know, of quality that they go, well, it's a Marvel program, let's stick with it. I understand this. They've kind of been holding my hand throughout these, you know, these series. So why not? Yeah, why not just completely go for this and entrust the story they're trying to tell?
Yeah. The thing that's worth noting, though, is like, you know, we're saying how weird and wacky this is, and it is, and I love it. And, you know, I think we should really talk about the cast, in particular, sort of Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Bettany, and how good they do. But this isn't the first time this has been done. To me, this sort of like, especially the second episode, really harkened back to Life on Mars and Ashes, you know, Ashes to Ashes, you know, Philip Glenister and D.I. Gene Hunt. I don't know if you guys ever watched that, but or like The Prisoner from the 60s and 70s, or even like sort of like Twin Peaks, you know, sort of Lynch and that weird, like, you know, this feels like that. You are dropped into the middle of a story, like there's no book ending. And that's one of the things I thought was really quite brave of them, was there's no book ending, because other TV shows would be a bit more like, oh no, we've got to give our audience something to show that there's a, you know, that there is a disparity between reality and what you're going to get. So I wouldn't have been surprised in another channel or another, you know, production company would have gone, okay, here's 3 minutes of S.W.O.R.D. setting up, and you get some sort of, you know, like a cold open in the present, in our reality, and then going into it. But no, this is just dropping you, you know, sort of right in the middle of the story.
Yeah.
And you've just got to catch up, and you've got to pick things up, like, you know, we'll go through the episodes, but in episode two, when you start to hear the radio, the voices coming through on the radio, which is when I thought, you know, Life on Mars. So, you know, it's not wholly new, but it's still brave of them, because I don't think the typical Marvel audience would have probably, you know, sat through some of those previous shows.
Now, guys, what do you reckon to the music, the theme tune? Because we've got a slightly different flavour from the first episode and the second episode. And I'll come to you, Matt, first.
So obviously, I've never really watched these shows. I understood the second episode was Bewitched. I got all that reference. It did make me laugh because I turned to my girlfriend when the end of the theme tune for the second one, and I said, what the F is this show? Like, this is bizarre that now we've changed the theme song to a superhero show and we're doing bloody Bewitched. I mean, I love stuff like, I love like homages and things like that that are done well. And that does pull me in a lot, and I thought it was a really creative way to do the opening credits.
How about yourself, Scott?
Yeah, no, I what it's done for me is, because the first one was done like a 50s sitcom, wasn't it? Sort of the I Love Lucy, as you say, and the second one was Bewitched, or that, you know, I Dream of Jeannie. And so I think, like you say, every episode now is going to have some creative credit. And I'm like, yeah, the next one, because the end of episode two, they go into colour, don't they? They sort of morph into the 70s. So I'm hoping that the next one is going to be like the Brady Bunch. You know, we're going to get a Brady Bunch one. In the 70s, you might get like a Happy Days one, or as it goes through the decades, we're going to get different homages to sort of recognisable sitcom credits.
Yeah. Oh, that would be great. If they could do it for each episode. And I can tell you that there is a bit of a link to the likes of Frozen for this one. So the music's written by Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez, and they were the team that put together Frozen. So they have got some pedigree for the music there.
Mm. Yeah, it's good. I mean, I like the fact that they're utilizing it. And, you know, again, it's being brave and just doing something different. And, it, you know,
you say about the credits, I think that also links to the adverts. I don't know what you thought of the little adverts that they put in there. The Stark Industries toaster and the Strucker Hydra watch.
I love both of those. And I thought what was interesting about the toaster, the toaster thing seemed to go on for a little bit longer than it should do. And obviously you see the red, and it's got a little bit of a look of vision, doesn't it? And it's kind of beeping away there, and everyone's kind of looking awkwardly. And I know in the comics, they kind of refer to Vision as a toaster in various points. I've just done the Tom King run with Max on Mandatory Marvel and DC. So I don't know if that's just a throwaway kind of thing, you know, to get the Stark Industries name in there, make it all feel connected, as they say, or there really is something deeper to that.
Well, the one thing I would say is about the adverts. I think there's something wider there, because it's the same two people. It's the same guy and the same woman in both adverts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's going to come back in some way, I think.
Now, you mentioned about Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany, and I think their chemistry is great. And I think the way they acted in that first episode was fantastic. It was like they were acting, not off, but really placed back into that time. And, you know, I think they work well together. Vision is clearly working in this place, this computational programming place, that he can't actually establish what is it they do. And I did like, he's talking to his workmates and stuff. And what is it he says? He says something like, I think his workmate says, "You're a machine." And he's like, "I am not. I'm a carbon-based life form like yourself," you know. So I just love the way he's playing it there. But, you know, what do you reckon to the whole dinner scene with the boss? Because, again, that's a trope, isn't it? Straight from the sitcoms, you invite the boss home. You know, Vision's only just started, but if this goes well, he could be up for a promotion. And I've got to say, I did like the line, you know, "We don't break bread with Bolsheviks," you know, when they find out that she's foreign. But what did you pick up from that whole dinner scene there?
For me, I felt like, so obviously there's the scene where the boss is choking on food, and they seem like they don't want to help him, but Wanda obviously tells Vision to help him. There's something going on in... For me, it's like I feel Wanda's created where they're living. They don't want to, like you say, like break character. So they are worried about ever exposing themselves. There's something obviously a bit more sinister going on, as into why were they so hesitant to help the boss? And obviously it's all going to come much clearer over more episodes. I think it's funny because this show's like, even though we're saying how wacky and crazy it was, there's not actually much to say about it because we don't really know where it's going at the moment.
What about yourself, Scott?
No, Matt makes a really good point. Like I say, it's a moment, and each episode has these moments where it sort of turns dark for a second, or there's sort of a, you know, there's something that sort of scratches away at the reality that Wanda appears to have created. And in this case, it's sort of, you know, they first, before the sort of the boss starts to choke, the wife, also from a sitcom by the way, is the mother from that 70s show. I can't remember her name, but you know, that was a sitcom nod for me.
Agnes.
Yes.
Yeah.
The fact that
I'll come back to her in a sec.
Okay, but they start to ask, you know, "Oh, so you've moved here, you know, where are you from? And why haven't you got wedding rings?" And it's these sort of things that you're starting, like we would on a podcast, they're poking holes in the plot. And, you know, it's obviously, it shakes Wanda and Vision. We're like, "Oh no, we came from, and we've known each other since."
Yeah.
And you can see that there's obviously a block of information missing that they haven't filled in. And then so at the end of it, when they do have that moment of, "Well, today is our anniversary and we've now got wedding rings and our song is going to be Yakety Yak," is like shoehorning in information to fulfill that sort of purpose. But there's still a gap. They still don't know where they've came from or why they moved there and this other stuff. And so it starts to shake it down a little bit. But it almost felt like that bit where the boss choked was almost like a distraction from the questions that were being asked. And I wasn't entirely sure that Wanda didn't do it.
You know what? I think what you've said and what Matt said before, I'm actually thinking of the Twilight Zone movie where you've got this little kid creating his own kind of reality. And I'm wondering if it is a bit of that, because it's quite chilling, because it's all been very kind of, you know, very sitcom-y. The way kind of especially Elizabeth Olsen is speaking, it's in that very nasally kind of voice, you know.
Yeah, but she's doing a Lucille Ball impression.
Exactly. And the wife, when the boss is choking, the wife of the boss is basically just repeating, stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it. Stop it. And you can see it's got this smile, which is more of a wince. It's like, stop it.
Who is she talking to? And that's one of the things.
Yeah.
Is she talking to Wanda, or is she talking to her husband? Yeah, that's what.
Or someone else, yeah. And eventually Wanda, though, she stops with that voice, the Lucille voice, and she just says in a natural voice, Vision, help him.
Yeah.
And then he actually goes and he takes out the whatever he was choking on. So I thought that was interesting. I'm kind of thinking of the Watchmen TV series as well. That played on a little bit of a theme like that. But no, really, really interesting. I couldn't quite figure out what was going on there. But, you know, once it was over, you know, they prepared all of this dinner. He'd had a bit of a choke. That was it. They were off, weren't they? Leaving all the food behind. So do we think these are real people or just a manifestation of her mind?
I think they're real. I definitely think they're real. I think, yeah, it's real people. I think Wanda has created... well, I don't know. It's early on to come up with your theories, but I think she's created this universe for herself. But she has... In creating it, entrapped people to live out this kind of utopia in her mind. But it's going to come much. I imagine the next few episodes are now going to start clearing up kind of what's happening. Because you remember, like, Kat Dennings, who plays Darcy Lewis in the fourth film, she's a main character of this series, but she hasn't even appeared yet. And so is Randall Park, who played the FBI agent in Ant-Man the Wasp. He's also a main character in this, but we're yet to see these characters. I think it's gonna start moving to try and fill in some of these blanks.
Yeah. Now, what I will say about Agnes, we don't know what her second name is, but I don't know if you guys are aware of a character called Agnes Harkness.
No.
She's very much tied up with Scarlet Witch and Vision in the comics. And she was said to be around in the Salem Witch Trials, but she's much older than that. She just happened to be around there at that time. And, you know, she originally appeared in the Fantastic Four. So she's got quite close ties to them. And I just wonder if it is Agnes Harkness, because the nosy neighbor, you know, she just keeps popping in. She's kind of helpful, but I don't really know. Is it going to be this character? But again, you know, she's a very powerful witch, and I think she might, you know, not just be the neighbor, but actually have more of a part to play.
I think all these characters in, I think you're right. I agree with Matt that I think they're all real people. And I think what we're going to find out that this thing's been going on for some time. I don't think episode one was like, oh, this, you know, she's created this bubble universe in some way. I think this may have been going on for, again, like I said, we're dropped in the story, because if we're going to get into, are we going to get into predictions and...
Well, if I just mention about the ending, because again, it's throughout the whole of episode one, it's just being I Love Lucy, and then it kind of it comes to the end and you get the whole zoom out again, very I Love Lucy, but when it zooms out you can see that it's being watched by someone on a regular TV, and you see the sword symbol. And you know, so sword, if people are listening and aren't aware, it's kind of it's an organization in the Marvel comics, a little bit like SHIELD. They operate in space, so it's it's basically humans. These aren't superpowered people in general. And I just wonder if they're going to play around with that, because something happens in episode two where I think of a different organization, but I think it is going to be S.W.O.R.D. And also with the credits as well, it rolls up with the producers and writers, and, and obviously these aren't the actual writers. The director for this one was Matt Shackman, who actually directed some of Game of Thrones season 7, also an episode of The Boys. And also the writer for episode 1 was Jack Schaefer, who co-wrote Black Widow. So again, you know, some proper talent is working on this.
So
what do you think? If this is something that Wanda's doing, I guess there's real people in there and they're just playing along. Who do we think's watching here?
Well, I think it is S.W.O.R.D. I mean, one of the nods or one of the little things you said about the colour on the radio. In each episode, red stands out. So there's a small toy helicopter that turns up in the hedge. And when Wanda looks at it, I mean, it's red and it's got the S.W.O.R.D. logo on it. And she sort of recognises it. And it's sort of, for that, you know, it's that thing of breaking character, isn't it? Like you said before, like she falls from character and just looks at it with concern. And then when the bitch from the local social group get him her hand, like the blood is red. And so the, you know, there's clearly this thing of like whenever the reality is broken in some way, it shows through in colour. But yeah, I think they're being watched by S.W.O.R.D. I think S.W.O.R.D. has replaced S.H.I.E.L.D. to some capacity. I think they've leveled up Wanda. I think they've leveled up Scarlet Witch to almost like, not quite Franklin Richards level, but to that sort of thing. And I think she's created some sort of pocket universe, like a pocket reality, in order to deal with the grief of, you know, I mean, there's a 5-year period between Infinity War and Endgame. So you'd sort of think she should have dealt with the grief maybe, but following defeating Thanos and everything that's gone on, maybe this is it. This is her way of coping with all that, is like, I'm done, I'm out, and now I'm going to create my own pocket universe, and I'm going to make it this idealistic little sitcom world. In doing so, she's actually kidnapping and harming other people.
Yeah, now, have you guys read House of M?
Yes.
I haven't, no, but I know the general storyline.
The general gist, because you know, she does play around with it. First she creates, you know, the whole world is mutants, and then, you know, she, the most iconic bit is, you know, when she says no more mutants. But again, she is playing with the whole universe, and you know, that rippled throughout all the comics at the time as well. I can tell you, it one of the Easter eggs was the wine at the dinner in episode 1 was called Maison du Mépris. Now, Maison du is house of, and Mépris translates to contempt, but there was a big M on the bottle. So it is Maison du, so house of M. So I think that, you know, it could just be a little Easter egg, or it could be, no, we are going to borrow quite heavily from this. And also, I'd never read this before, but when they were looking at the calendar, they knew this thing, this date was significant, and then there's this back and forth. They neither of them know what it is. The 23rd of August is actually Jack Kirby's birthday.
Oh, really?
But also, so Avengers 238, so if you got Marvel Unlimited, you can go and have a quick look, as I did. Right, basically Vision is he starts off and Star Fox has joined the Avengers there, and he's having a bit of a moan because he has to look after Vision, who'd been taken out a few issues earlier by the looks of it. And then he kind of comes around, but only initially through his kind of voice box. So he'd been, you know, put out of action and was repairing himself. And by the end of that story, he could project a holographic image of himself. And then he starts to go a little bit off the rails, gets a bit egotistical. But I thought that was interesting as well. So 238, so 23rd of April, it could have something to do with that, or it could have absolutely nothing to do with that. I thought Jack Kirby's birthday was the probably the better one.
They'll definitely borrow from House of M. I think that's the storyline. They'll want to integrate some way into MCU, especially now they have the X-Men and they can kind of tell these stories a bit better. They're not going to do it sort of page for page, but I think they'll definitely take some ideas from it, won't they, of course.
Yeah.
I think that you say about, you know, House of M, and we've talked about sort of the No More Mutants, when she sort of, you know, states that and it makes the change. I think, you know, this is almost going to be in reverse. You know, I think because it's no coincidence that, you know, one of the ones that are going to follow on soon after this is Doctor Strange 2, Multiverse of Madness. And they're talking about the multiverse for Spider-Man. I mean, you know, am I mad to think that the end of this is going to be, they break her, they stop doing what she's doing, and she is going to retaliate, and it's going to tear open the multiverse?
Definitely. I think that's something that was probably going to happen. I mean, she's Elizabeth Olsen's confirmed, isn't she, for Multiverse of Madness. So there's something that she's creating this pocket reality. She's going to obviously break out, fight her way out in some sort of way. And I think there is then when obviously I think it's quite clever in that obviously they're probably setting up this show to explain multiverses and stuff like that to more casual fans and audience members, so that it makes more sense come around Multiverse of Madness.
So actually, I mean, it could be, because we saw her in Spider-Man, it wasn't Homecoming, it was Far From Home, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where the multiverse was hinted at, and then it, spoilers, but it turns out not to be the case.
Mm.
So we haven't actually seen a multiverse in the MCU yet, and I'm just wondering, actually, you know, Scarlet Witch in the comics is very powerful. Like I say, she decimated the mutants for a time. I'm wondering if she's actually the cause of this, you know, this fracture in space and time and creating all these pocket universes.
Oh, that's what I think. I think you'll find that, because there has been rumours of people on set, you know, for the filming of this, and they're not in the credits, but or on our IMDb, but Benedict Cumberbatch was seen apparently on set. So that to me, that's exactly what this is. This is the real kicking off of Phase 4, or at least one branch of it. You know, you're going to have the spy or the action side of things, and then I think you're going to have the magic and the multiverse side of things. And I think, like you said, opening up those pocket universes or access to these multiverses is going to be, oh, look, there's a universe here where the Avengers don't exist, but the Fantastic Four does. And there's another one where, you know, we don't have the Avengers or the Fantastic Four, but we've got the X-Men or something. And I think the end of this is going to be, you know, something. I mean, I don't think they'll replicate what they did with the teleportation portals in Endgame, but the idea of all these people coming together through multiverses to take on a single villain is pretty impressive.
Yeah, and I guess I'm thinking about what you guys have said about, you know, this is a real thing, but I guess the voices through the radio, what they were saying was, Wanda, who's doing this to you? And I'm just wondering, who could that be?
I don't think it's anybody. I think they
think it's her.
Yeah, I think there is a perception that she is under attack or being held hostage, and they are going to find out that it's her that's done it to herself.
Okay, so my next kind of point that I had down. So she notices. Actually, what do you guys in the second episode make to the whole kind of magic trick? Because again, the way that all starts off. And I had great fun kind of reading around this morning, that my kids asked me, why are they in twin beds? And I was like, oh yeah, that is weird. So I read up, there was this thing called the Hays Code.
I was about to mention that, yeah.
Yeah, so well, you probably know more about it than me. Do you want to tell us what the Hays Code is, Scott?
Yeah, so the Hays Code was created, I think, in the late 20s into the 30s.
Yep.
Was basically a set of rules for, because movies were a new thing, was a set of rules for things that could and could not be shown on screen. And you know, we now talk about sort of like the censors and that across the world, and they'll be like, oh no, you can't have this level of gore or this, you know, this level mm-hmm. of sex and violence. They were like, you can't have two people in the same bed because it suggests sex. You can't have, you can't show a toilet on screen. You can't show kissing. You can't show holding hands, I think was one of them. You can't show any, it's similar to the comics code of the 50s. In
yeah. It's like, yeah, yeah.
You can't show disparaging behavior or things of figures of authority. There's all kinds of bits and pieces. It was very weird.
But apparently Bewitched was the first show to actually show them in a double bed.
Oh, right. Oh, wow.
And I thought, wow, that is, you know, that is a lot of thought and a deep cut. In, you know, so like you say, they're not just, you know, going way into the comics and trying to figure out, okay, based on where they are in the MCU, how are they going to craft this story? But like you say, they're going deep into the original kind of pop culture stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
But what I was going to say is, when the guy comes out of the manhole, and he's got all the bees around him, and he's in his beekeeper suit. My first thought was, that's AIM. That's Advanced Idea Mechanics. That's what it is. And then I thought, hang about, they've done that, haven't they? So in Iron Man 3, you had Aldrich Killian, and AIM was his little baby. So I'm like, oh no, they won't be able to do that now, because they've kind of gone down a different route. So do we have any thoughts on that, what that could be? Or again, it's just sword again, because yeah. I guess he had a sword logo on his back, didn't he?
It is like, yeah, it's kind of like I said, like so much, because there's so much to talk about, but there isn't, because there's just right now it's just all such theories. There's nothing kind of written in stone about where this show is gonna go. I mean, I didn't even have one clue about who the guy was coming out of the manhole cover in the bee suit. I was thoroughly, thoroughly confused. And then when she says no and it all reverses, I mean, what that confirmed to me was she has some control over what is happening in this universe. She kind of knows what's happening, but at the same time doesn't. Like obviously when she saw the little toy helicopter in the bushes, and then obviously the horrible neighbor whose hand got cut. It just seems, yeah, she has some sort of control. I felt like, for me, it was someone maybe trying to pull her out of what was happening, and she's obviously not ready to give up what's happening in her head, essentially.
Yeah, it's a bit like Total Recall, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that bit in Total Recall where they go in to speak to Arnie, you know, Douglas Quaid saying,
yeah,
you're not really here. You're still in the chair at Recall.
Yeah,
I'm talking to you through an implant, you know, and then he sees that bead of sweat, and he's like, "Bullshit." There's a bit of that. Like she's in full denial for the most part, and then when anything cracks that reality, she'll do anything she can to try and just sort of deny it or move away from it. Like, to the extent of, I love the fact that it was a rewind effect.
Yeah.
To those kids that have never seen a rewind effect, never had a video, that's what it was. I thought that was a really good moment. And again, I like the fact, like you say, Matt, they're not giving us anything to say, like, you know, because he could have come in full tactical and been a sword, you know, sword operative, and you'd have been like, oh, okay. But no, he's come through in a beekeeper's outfit, and you're like, all right, I don't know what that is.
So for Matt, I guess AIM in the comics, they go around in these kind of yellow, and they look like beekeeper suits, and they kind of nickname that. So it's another kind of organization like Hydra. They're just really into their scientific stuff.
There's and so many ideas, organizations so. Now being brought into the MCU, you know, like Time Variance Authority Law. You got S.W.O.R.D. and now we could be getting AIM as well. Can't be part of it all.
Well, Baron von Strucker did actually found AIM. So again, which is why I thought it was. But honestly, I don't think it is, just because they've done that with Iron Man 3, unless this might tie back to that, I guess. What do you guys reckon to drunk Vision? You know, getting a bit drunk on a bit of chewing gum there.
I really enjoyed that sequence. I found that quite funny. I found that very kind of sitcom-ish, you know, the drunk husband ruins everything, and you know, the wife has to make sure everything stays in line as they go, you know, as they're doing their act. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was like a cool little homage of how things kind of worked with these sitcoms of that era. You know, the husband was a bit of an idiot and the wife had to be a bit, you know, more sterner, the sort of the brains of the operation. I mean, I really enjoyed that. I do like that, the joke of the show is he's not human and he's always trying to make sure people never in any way reference he might not be. And I like that. It's like a classic running gag that isn't a sitcom. You know, there's always a running gag, and that is the gag. I really enjoyed that sequence of events. I want to understand how, like, real was it? Like, would Vision really get like drunk off eating some chewing gum? How real are these things, or are they just like a manifestation to, you know, be more sort of sitcom-ish?
What about yourself, Scott?
Yeah, no, I agree. I like this idea of, like, you know, is it a manifestation of Wanda's her imagination of this scenario? I think it was just a testament to the actor of, you know, especially, like I said, to the main two actors, Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany, where you're saying, yeah, you're not doing a superhero show, you are doing a nostalgic 50s or 60s sitcom. And they just give it their all. Like, they are giving you everything, you know, that they could. This is, you know, he's playing up to it and she's playing up to it. Like, if they hadn't have committed to this, it wouldn't have worked. I think it would have been, they'd have had some real problems. And I think there's some actors that would have struggled with it. But I think these two, you know, they get it. And they obviously know where it's going. And it's going to pay off. But I love the fact that they have committed to this. And I think that whole magic trick sequence was just, as you say, Matt, it was just funny in itself. I just enjoyed it as a weird little sequence. So, fair play to them for committing to this and sort of, you know, steering for the whole, we're going for this big thing, but you've got to go through this weirdness first and you're going to love it. So, fair play to them.
Yeah, I must admit, I think Paul Bettany in particular, I found myself thinking, he's just amazing. He can play that kind of stuffy butler, you know, almost Mr. Data type Vision. But he goes so easily into the charming kind of Hugh Grant, kind of goofy type sitcom character as well. And I just thought it was great. You know, like you said, Matt, would a piece of chewing gum actually do that? Probably not, but we can just go with it. I did love the way, you know, Wanda was constantly trying to excuse his actual powers. So in particular, that first bit where he's showing off that he can fly. And then she very quickly, you know, whips up this little rope and it's like, oh, look, that. And everyone's like, oh, look, that's how they're doing it. And even when he phases through his hat through himself, she just shows a bunch of mirrors. Everyone's like, is that how mirrors work? I don't know. But, you know, so I just thought that whole sequence was absolutely brilliant as well. And like I say, testament to the actors.
Definitely. I thought Paul Bettany, even though Elizabeth Olsen was fantastic, I think Paul Bettany was the best part of it all.
You know what actually jarred with me quite a bit? And actually, Scott, you're starting off to do Westworld. Have you started watching those yet?
Not yet. We'll be starting today, I think.
Okay. Well, and have you seen it before?
I've seen the first two seasons, yeah.
Okay. In a weird way, this reminded me of that first season of Westworld, where there is so much going on. And you have to watch it a few times to see all the different things that are going on. And probably the more you watch it, the more little things you'll pick up on. But one of the things I found really jarring was the laughter track was still going on while everyone was outside. I don't know if you guys noticed that, but normally if you have a laughter track, it's because it's all filmed in front of a live studio audience. But when they were outside, you know, and having their little clubs and things and just walking about, you still had that laughter track going.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
No, it's good. I think it's to try and sort of, like, you know, you maybe because you sort of expect it, because there'd be candle after as well on some of these things. But yeah, I think it's to try and sort of keep that level of weird, isn't it? That level of slightly off kilter.
Yeah, yeah. Now, at the end, obviously, we see with a click of the fingers almost, you know, you see once Wanda's done her old rewind, once she sees the beekeeper, you see she's actually pregnant. And I mentioned Agnes Harkness as well. And she, in the comics, she helped her get pregnant. And again, that was kind of one of the things. She ended up wiping her memory and, you know, leading up to House of M, you know, recovering some of those dreams or you know, wondering what the hell's happened to her children. That kind of led up to House of M there. So what do you think is going to happen next? So predictions time. Scott?
I think we're going to move forward into the Brady Bunch era. So I think we're going to have sort of like late 60s, early 70s sitcoms. It's obviously going to be in colour. I think by the end of the next episode, she'll have had the children. And I think it's this, the weirdness will grow. But from a sitcom point of view, I think that's what it's going to be. I think she will have her kids in a single episode. They'll go through pregnancy in a single episode. And no one will question it.
How about you, Matt?
I think, yeah, definitely. Also, they're going to do sort of the Brady Bunch 1970s period. I think, obviously, it's just going to get weirder, to be honest. They'll either go one or two ways. Either begin explaining some stuff, explaining what's happening, or they will ramp up the mystery and add in more weird and wackier stuff and make fans question more. So then, you know, so throughout the week, it gets people talking. So I'm not 100% sure what they'll go with it, because I think you can't keep doing every episode it's so weird and wacky without some answers. So mm-hmm. it's going to go either way, either really weird and wacky, no answers, or, you know, just little tidbits here and there.
You know, something that's just occurred to me, we were talking a little bit before we started recording about the run-in time. And these were both really short episodes. And I'm sure when they first talked about this season, it was going to be 6 episodes.
Mm.
Now it's 9. And I'm actually just wondering, have they actually just edited it so that it's a...
So this was originally...
6 episodes.
Well, or because this first episode is incredibly... These first two episodes equal about in running time. The first one was literally 20 minutes long.
Yeah, like a normal sitcom length, really, yeah.
And then the second one was 23 minutes long. Or maybe a bit more than that, maybe about 25, 26. But if you put them together, you get a just over 40-minute show.
Yeah.
So it could have been that this was actually one episode at one point.
I definitely think so, yeah. I mean, it could easily work as one episode, to be honest. Mm. It very easily. I reckon you're right there, Dave, that they... began with 6 episodes. They said, hey, let's do it more. Each episode is an era and go from there.
Mm.
Yeah, because, again, I'm just thinking, well, the first half is very... It's all black and white, isn't it? It's kind of half I Love Lucy, half Bewitched for the second episode. But, yeah, you could have that as one pilot episode, and then at the end of it, you Wizard of Oz it, you're going into colour.
If you had that as this, that to me, the end of episode 2 makes more sense as the end of a pilot. Because if you know, you sort of mentioned all those other shows like Watchmen, and you think mm-hmm. about like Doom Patrol, or whatever shows that have an element of the weird in them, you need some form of crack in that facade to introduce, you know, elements of reality or further weird. And those don't really come until the end of the second episode. The beekeeper, the little helicopter. The one thing we haven't mentioned is the noise. You know, throughout the second episode.
The noise outside, the noise, yeah.
That's never, you know, we never find out the purpose of, or the, you know, what's causing it, is, to me, is this external force trying to get in. And so, yeah, to me, it all escalates through those two episodes. It would not surprise me at all if originally this was one episode and then you ended with them transferring to colour and her being pregnant.
Yeah, and I, while we're speculating, and again, I'm just thinking really more from the comics and the fact that, you know, we think this is going to be joined up quite a lot with, I'd say to a lesser extent, Spider-Man, although who knows what that's going to be with all the different actors from the past that's going to be in there. But definitely with Doctor Strange. I'm thinking Mephisto is somewhere in there.
Yeah. If she's pregnant and has those two children, she's obviously going to be attached to them. And you've just mentioned that House of M, you know, is caused because of the two children. And if I remember rightly, spoilers for House of M, you said Agnes helps her, but they're fictional, aren't they? They're created out of reality.
Yeah.
Well, if she ends up having two non-children, or having children out of her own magical ability to create them rather than being biological children, and then she has to face up to having to give up these children at the end of this series, and it's Doctor Strange or whoever that does that, that's traumatizing enough. And that's exactly that sort of, like you say, leads into House of M sort of territory. So her becoming pregnant probably is probably more pivotal than we realize at this point.
Yeah.
And I'll just mention one thing just before we wrap up. I don't know if you spotted the character Geraldine. So she's the lady who she appeared in the magic show.
Oh, yes.
Well, she's played by a character called Tiona Paris, who is actually, and again, if you don't want to know this, guys, for...
Rambo?
She is Monica Rambeau.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty sure that as well, in terms of predictions of what's going to happen next, I think, you know, hopefully we'll start to see her character, because obviously we saw her mum. Mm-hmm. In fact, we saw her, didn't we? Just as a little girl in Captain Marvel. But I'm hoping that reveal will come out soon. Now, guys, this has been brilliant. Like I say, I think this show is just boggling the mind. It's had my conspiracy wall filled up. I've been trying to figure out what's going on. But guys, where can we get you? So first of all, Scott.
If you're looking, find us at 20th Century Geek. So come find us on Twitter under at 20th Century Geek. Come find me at Scott Weatherly. And of course, if you want to talk about sci-fi, you can find me at Pod Time Space. Talk about stories out of time and space.
Awesome. And how about yourself, Matt?
You can either go to my YouTube channel, which is Jasper Reviews, where I do sort of reviews and video essays and just discuss anything that's kind of happening with pop culture. Or you can listen to my podcast, which is What's the Topic? And that's on the Comics in Motion podcast on Spotify. And you can, follow me on Twitter, Jasper Reviews or What's the Topic?
Awesome. Well, I can't wait for episode 3. Mm. And again, we'll be back next Sunday where... someone will be talking to you. Maybe it'll be us three, maybe it's someone else. We'll figure that out then. Thanks a lot for your time, guys, and I'll speak to you again soon.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.
Understand what's happening.
Look, it's the star of the show.
I'm sorry?
Wanda. Can you read me?
And they lived happily ever after.
Wanda.
Oh, this is gonna be a gas.